Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Membet Amud Aleph by the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Hamudar Hana'ami Chaviro Lifnei Shvi'it. Individual who is restricted in getting Hana'ah from his friend before Shvi'it. Inu Yored Letoch Sadeu. First of all, he cannot enter into his field. And number two is, Veino Ochel Minanotot. And he can't eat from the fruits that extend over to a location where he doesn't have to enter the field. For instance, trees, fruits, that are hanging over the Rishut HaRabim, which he could pick or take, even without accessing his friend's property. Ubashvi'it, Einu Yored Letoch Sadeu. When it's Shemitah, he's not permitted to enter into the field. Aval Ochelhu Minanotot. He is allowed to pick those fruits that are hanging over the edge or over the borderline where he doesn't have to enter into the field. Nadare Menu Ma'achal lifnei shvi'it. If he restricted himself from ma'achal before shvi'it, yorei letoch sadeu, he's allowed to then access the field, ve'en ochel min ha'perot, and he cannot eat the fruits, uba shvi'it, yorei ve'ochel. And on shvi'it, he can go in, and he can eat. So over here, there are two basic approaches to the Mishnah, which is, we'll see, actually work out in the Gemara, that it seems that the Gemara's Havamina is to entertain those two possibilities of reading the Mishnah, which is you have two sections in the beginning of the Mishnah. One, which is Amudar Hanami Chaviro, Lifnei Shvi'it, before the Shvi'it, and then Uba Shvi'it. And then the Mishnah tells you on Shvi'it itself. So the question is, what is the connection between those two parts of the Mishnah? The first part of the Mishnah, which is Lifnei Shvi'it, and the second part of the Mishnah, which is Uba Shvi'it. So the two approaches to this, one is to suggest that the entire Mishnah is talking about the same case, which is that it's a person who took a neder hana'ah from his friend lifnei shvi'it. So then the din is prior to shvi'it, enu yoreid letoch sadeu, v'enu ochel minotot. That's the din before shvi'it. Uba shvi'it. With that same neder, when shvi'it comes, then the din changes. So on shvi'it, the din will be different than lifnei shvi'it. So the same nether that he took before Shvi'it has an impact when it is before Shvi'it. And then when Shvi'it comes, the nature of that nether changes because of the laws of Shemitah, which change his din vis-a-vis the person's property. So that's the way, if you look in the Rosh explains it that way, that Uba Shvi'it means Kishi Yagia Shvi'it. When the Shvi'it comes, that will be the din. On the other hand, the other approach to the Mishnah over here is Uba Shvi'it is different than the first case. Hamudar Hana Mechaviro Lifnei Shvi'it. Person takes a neder hana from his fellow Jew before Shvi'it. This is his din, which is Enu Yored Letoch Sadeu. And Ve'enu Ochel Min Hagnotot, that's true before Shvi'it and on Shvi'it itself. Then Uba Shvi'it means if he took the neder on Shvi'it. So if he took the neder on Shvi'it, this will be the din. Enu Yored Letoch Sadeu. And that's the way, if you look in Tosafot, Tosafot says, Ubashvi'it, Perush, Imhidir, Bishvi'it, if he took the nether on Shvi'it. So those are the two possible explanations of the Mishnah. The first one, according to the Rosh, is that we have one case here. It's where he took a nether prior to Shvi'it. And in taking that nether prior to Shvi'it, there's one din before Shvi'it, another din when Shvi'it comes. The second approach is that there are actually two independent cases. There's the first case where he took a neder before Shvi'it, and this will be his din, whether it's before Shvi'it or Shvi'it itself. And then there's a second din, is when he took the neder on Shvi'it itself, this will be the din, because he took the neder on Shvi'it. Now, obviously, the din of Shvi'it, we're in a Shemitah year now, we know that the din of Shvi'it is that a person's property is mufkar, in a sense, that the access to his property is now open to the public, so that people can enter and take those fruits. In addition to that, the fruits themselves are hefker, that a person can go ahead and take those fruits and eat those fruits. And it's not granting hana'ah to anybody because they don't belong to him. So in the case of Shvi'it, no matter how you read it, whether you read it as that now Shvi'it is here based on the nether before Shvi'it, or whether you read it that the nether was on Shvi'it, it should be that when he is asur b'hana'ah on Shvi'it, he has full access to the person's field, and full access to the peirot. The end of Gemara today will explain why the Mishnah says he cannot go into the field. But that is gzeirah, or that's because of some technicality. But otherwise, we would assume he could enter the field. As far as the perot are concerned, it's clear here that he is mutar to benefit from the fruits that are in the field. And those fruits that he benefits from in the field, we say that notot he can eat if it's on shvi'it. So here, in distinguishing between before shvi'it and after shvi'it, the main difference is whether the person owns the items or does not own the items. Now, the reason that a person cannot enter his friend's field is because of drisat haregel, Tosavot and the Rosh point that out, which is the hana'ah of accessing your friend's field. It has to be in a time when people don't generally allow others to walk through their field. So if he walks through the field, then he's getting hana'ah from his friend. So that's why he's precluded from entering into the field. So here you have those two approaches to the Mishnah. The latter half of the Mishnah, which talks about machal versus hana'ah, the obvious difference there is that we saw earlier in the Masechta, what's the difference between an Isur hana'ah and Isur machal? That was drisat regel, the ability to access your friend's property. So over here, if he only is asur mi machal, then the drisat regel issue goes away, and the only thing that's left is the machal issue. And then shvi'it, machal, or taking of the fruits of shvi'it, will no longer be an issue because those fruits are hefker. That's the difference between the ratio and the seifa of the Mishnah. Right, there are four cases in the Mishnah, but you have a ratio and a seifa. In the ratio, there are two pieces, and in the seifa, you have two pieces. The ratio has two pieces, which is amudar na lifnei shvi'it, and then bishvi'it. And then you have a latter half of the Mishnah, the seifa, which has two cases, which is lifnei shvi'it and bishvi'it. In both cases, the question of shvi'it, which again, the Rosh interprets to mean that it's the same neder, just when shvi'it arrives, this is what happens. Versus the Tosafot, who says Uba Shvi'it, means when he took the nether on Shvi'it itself. And we'll explain better what that difference is or why that makes a difference in a couple of minutes. Okay, Rav Ushmuel, the Amrei Tavayu. Rav and Shmuel have the following opinion. Here there's a question about the Girsa, whether it's Nichasim Eilu Alecha or Nichasai Eilu Alecha. If he says this Nifnei Shvi'it, prior to the Shvi'it, Eino yureid l'toch sadeu, ve'eino chel min anotot. Af al pi shi'igia shvi'it. Person is precluded then from entering the field, or eating this individual's fruits, whether it's before shvi'it, or even once the shvi'it arrives. Ve'im b'shvi'it, nadar, if he took the nether on shvi'it, eino yureid l'toch sadeu, he's still precluded from entering the field, aval ochel min anotot. But he does eat from those fruits that are accessible to him without entering into the field. Rabbi Yochanan v'Resh Lakish de Amrei Tovayu. Rabbi Yochanan v'Resh Lakish believed nechasai alecha lifnei shvi'it. If he says this before shvi'it, ein yored l'toch sadeu v'ein ochel min anotot, then he cannot enter the field and he cannot eat those fruits that are accessible. Higia shvi'it. And once shvi'it arrives, and you already talk to them, he still can't access the field. But he is able to eat the notot, those fruits that hang over. So now, in essence, if you look at this machloket here between Rav Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan Resh Lakish, this seemingly is the two ways to read the Mishnah. That Rav and Shmuel are explaining the Mishnah as being two different cases. The first case is he takes a net of lifnei shvi'it, and that has application both lifnei shvi'it and on shvi'it itself. Whereas Rabbi Yochanan ben Lakish, and if he takes the netter on shvi'it, then the din is slightly different. Whereas Rabbi Yochanan and Resh Lakish believe that the Mishnah is one case, which is hamudar hanam echaverol lifnei shvi'it. That's the din lifnei shvi'it. But once shvi'it arrives, the din changes because it is shvi'it. So on the surface, it looks like that Rav and Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan and Resh Lakish are arguing in the interpretation of the Mishnah, the same way that we had the two interpretations, that of the Rosh and that of the Tosafot. The Rosh, who believes that it's one case, that's like Rav and Shmuel, and Tosafot, who indicated that it was two cases that's similar to Rabbi Yochanan and Resh Lakish. But the Gemara now says maybe that's not their machloka, but Lema b'haka miflege. Maybe this is the argument between them. The Rav and Shmuel savrei adam usir davar shibirshuto, afilu kishi yetzei mirshuto. Person has the ability to be osir, something in his possession, even once it leaves his possession. Rabbi Yochanan Resh Lakish savrei, ein adam osir davar shibirshuto, kli sheyetzei mirshuto. He doesn't have the ability to be osir something in his possession for when it leaves his possession. So now their machloket deals with a number of things that we've seen before. The first of which is that when it comes to nidarim in general, we've seen before that in order to create an Isur Hana'a, you have to control at least one side of the object. Which means that either you have to be a party to the neder in the sense that you are the one who is becoming a Isur Hana'a, or you have to be a party to the neder that you own the object that's becoming a Isur Hana'a. So, for instance, you could be Oser someone else in your possessions, or you could be Oser yourself in someone else's possessions. So you don't have to own the object, but because it's you interacting with it, you can make it Asur. Or because you own the object, you can make someone else's interaction with it Asur. But that implies that if it was not in your possession, meaning that it left your possession, then you wouldn't have the ability to do this. And we've seen that before, which is you cannot be Oser someone else's property on a third party. You can't say that someone else's possessions are Asur on Ploni because you don't have control over the object because it's someone else's. And you don't control the interaction because it's not you who's interacting. So the question now here is in a situation where it starts out that you had control over the object, but the object is going to leave your possession. What happens in that instance when the possession is going to leave your, when the object is going to leave your possession? Does that change the status of the object automatically? Or does the object, because it's Asur, remain Asur afterwards? And so that seemingly is the machloket here between Rav Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish. Because Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish say, very simply, Ein adam osir devar shebishuto k'desheyetze mirshuto. You can't restrict an object that's in your possession and continue that restriction beyond the time that you own the object. So that's the case in the Mishnah. If you think about the case in the Mishnah, which is, a person is mudar me'ana'a lifnei shvi'it. Before shvi'it, he owns and controls the situation. It's his property. It's his fruits. So he can make that stipulation that someone cannot get hana'a from that field or from those fruits. Shvi'it comes, and he no longer controls that which is there. The fruits have been taken out of his possession. The land has been taken out of his possession because the Torah requires that because of Shemitah. So now that he took the neder before shvi'it, mishi gia shvi'it, when shvi'it comes, the din will change. The din will change because he no longer owns the object. He doesn't own the object, then he would be being oser, or something that doesn't belong to him, on a third party, and he doesn't have the right or ability or capability to do such a thing. So based on that, Rabbi Yochanan will just read our Mishnah saying, person takes the neder before shvi'it, that's the din before shvi'it. But once shvi'it arrives, the din will change because you've lost your ability, in this case, to take the neder, make it asur, because you've lost the one aspect that made you in control of the situation, which is ownership. And that was taken away from you. On the other hand, Rav and Shmuel say that if you engaged the neder beforehand, even though later on you lose control, that's not enough of a reason to say that the object is no longer in your possession, and therefore the neder goes away. There are different ways to formulate that. One way to formulate that is simply that the Isur can't just disappear. Just because you changed possessions doesn't make the Isur disappear automatically. Now, we'll see later on in the Gemara, but that might have to do with the din of a konam that we saw before, that konam functions like hekdesh. And just like by hekdesh, we know that the din of hekdesh is that once something becomes mukdash, it doesn't automatically lose its hekdesh unless you redeem it. There's only way to get rid yourself of hekdesh or to take the hekdesh off the object is to redeem it or to remove it. Without an active removal, it will remain that way. And so too over here. Person takes a neder and makes something asur. It will remain in that state of isur unless something has been changed, unless there is some active involvement to change it in some way. That's what Rav and Shmuel say. Rav and Shmuel say, if you take a neder before shvi'it, even though shvi'it has arrived and the objects now leave your possession, the isur still remains in place. And therefore, they explain the Mishnah as being a case where if you took it before shvi'it, the neder, then this is the din, whether it's before shvi'it, whether it is shvi'it, the din remains all the same because he made it asur. On the other hand, if you take the neder on shvi'it itself, you don't own the objects. Since you don't own the objects on shvi'it, that's why the neder, or that's why the din will be different, because then you started from a position where your ownership was not full in that sense, And because Yonashir wasn't full, therefore the din is different on Shvi'it itself. Okay, so first of all, just by definition, we're talking about Nidarim here, so we're talking about a Chepta. So we're not talking about a Gavra at all. Your suggestion is correct from based on a Gemara that we saw earlier, a Mishnah that we saw earlier, which is an individual who takes a Neder in the following form. Mishnah gave us two examples, which he said, number one, he says, Bayit ze asur alai, that this house is asur to me. Or he says, Beitcha asur alai, your house is restricted on me. Over there, the Mishnah differentiated between those two languages. If he says, Beitcha asur alai, that your house is asur to me, if the party who owns the house sells it or passes away, then this individual becomes mutar bahana, because he said it in the possessive form, which is Beitcha, your house. Once it stops being your house, then the neder will automatically dissolve because there's no longer Beit Cha. On the other hand, if he says Bayit Ze Alai, this house is restricted to me, then irrespective of who the owner is, meaning if he sold or he passed away, the restriction will remain in place because he designated the Bayit Hazeh, this house, to be Asur. So we did see earlier in the Mishnayot that there is such a distinction between whether you say it in the words of Beit Cha, or if you say it as Bayit Zeh. Now, based on that, you could argue over here that there's a similar thing going on with regards to Rav and Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, which is what type of language did he use when he made it Asur? And that is the possibility that he used Nichasai, if he says that it's my possessions are Asur to you, or he says, Nechasim Elu. These Nechasim are Asur to you. Now, if you look in the language that was used, Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish say, Nechasai Alecha. My Nechasim are restricted to you. By using that possessive form of Nechasai Alecha, that shows that he wanted to restrict only the Nechasim when they were in his possession. Once they left his possession, he wasn't going to make them Asur. And therefore, maybe the din here is based on Nechasai. The fact that he used that terminology of Nechasai similar to saying Beitcha. On the other hand, Rav and Shmuel said, Nechasim Elu Alecha. They used the language of not Nechasai when they are my possessions, but rather, Nechasim Elu Alecha. These Nechasim are restricted to you. Here he did not use the possessive form. And since he didn't use the possessive form, now based on the Girsa that we have in our Gemara, I noted before that there were Girsaot that said Nechasai Elu Alecha, which might have to do with the Girsa change at the end of the Gemara here today. But if he said it Nechasim Elu, then he said it in the more generic sense, that these Nechasim will remain Asur to you, irrespective of my ownership. It has nothing to do with my ownership. So now, based on that, right now I'm just explaining to you the way that the Gemara is explaining it now, how we could differentiate their opinions and explain it. Based on what I'm saying now, you could actually reconcile their opinions, which is say that they're really not talking about the same case. Because in one case, you're using Nechasayim Elu, the other case, you're using Nechasai. But the Gemara's assumption at this point is that clearly, if you use Nechasai Elu, if you use Nechasai, my possessions, it's clear that if you use Nechasai, then you only Asur Birshuto, when it is in his possession. Then, if you use Nechasim Elu, that's where it seemingly is there is a machlok between Rav and Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. The Rav and Shmuel at that point would say that you can maintain the Isur, because you said Nechasim Elu instead of Nechasai without the possessive form. On the other hand, Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish are going to say that Nechasai definitely terminates, and Nechasim Elu also terminate. And they're going to explain here that there's a difference. What about that case of Beit Cha versus Bayit Zeh? Because the neder, or the party, the subject of the neder, is different in each of these cases. So it's one thing when the person taking the neder specifies either Beit Cha or Bayit Zeh. Because if the individual taking the neder does that, again, he's in control of one part of the nether, which is him, his relationship with this object. So he can make a decision. His nether can either apply to this house while it's in the possession of this individual, or he can take the nether that the nether will outlive the individual is in the house now because he took the netter specifically towards this house. Maybe he had bad luck in this house, something went wrong in this house, whatever reason, he's taking the netter and is going to outlive the individual who lives there then. That's fine, because in both those instances, he's still the party to the nether, and that always remains the same. On the other hand, when you're talking about the person who owns the field or the fruits making those objects a sore on another person, so as long as those objects are in his possession, it works fine. He can do that because he controls one side of the nether. And then once those objects leave his possession, how is it possible that he can continue to make them a sore on another party? What right does he have here? He's not the related party anymore. He doesn't own them anymore. So therefore, the language won't make a difference according to Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish. So what you have here now is that everybody would agree, technically by Nechasai, that the nether would terminate after this person, it left that person's possession. Nechasim Eilu, that's where their machloket is. Once it's Nechasim Eilu, then Ram and Shmuel say that's a different din than Nechasai. Whereas Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish say that's the same din as Nechasai. And even though we have a differentiation when you say Beit Cha versus Bayit Zeh, over here that differentiation won't stand because of the difference in the case. Over here you lose total control and therefore you can't maintain the Isser on the other party. So now the Gemara says, V'tizbra, mi ika daman damar, en adam oser davar shibishuto kadashietze mirshuto. How is it, are you so certain that there's anybody who believes that you cannot restrict something once it leaves your possession? Why? Imkein. The Gemara asks two questions on that. Niflege b'nechasim elu. If that's the case, then they should argue, Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish versus Rav and Shmuel, they should argue in nechasim elu. Meaning Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish only mention nechasai in their statement. If it's really true that they argue, even in that other case, the terminology that should have been used over here is nechasim elu. And certainly nechasai. So if that was true, what we said before, what we stipulated before, then Rabbi Yochanan Rish Lakish should have said nechasim elu, and that would be a bigger chiddush to say in that case, it doesn't become asur, then of course in a case where he says nechasai, it will not remain asur afterwards. Vitu. And in addition to that, hatnan. We have a Mishnah later on. The Adam Oser Davar Shibishuto, Kleshietze Mishuto. We have an explicit Mishnah that says that that does work. That a person has the ability to be Oser something once it leaves his possession. That's none. Ha'omer Livno, Kunam Shatan Eilei, I am taking a nether that you will get no Hana from me. Mate, Yirashenu. If he passes away, then the son inherits him. The son inherits him not because his father granted the inheritance to him, but because the Torah grants him the inheritance. So he's not getting any benefit from his father in that instance because the inheritance is not a derivative of his father's generosity or benevolence. It's simply that the Torah says when a father passes away, a child's entitled to the inheritance. On the other hand, if he states the nether in this fashion, b'chayav u'bimoto, he says that I restrict you in getting hana from me whether I'm alive or dead, imeit lo yirashenu. If he dies, then the child may not inherit the parent. And as the Ron says over here, it's not, we'll get to it when we get to the Mishnah on Mem Zayin, but it's a lav dafka lo yirashenu. He does inherit him, because again, he can't change the fact that the Torah grants the inheritance to the child, but over here, the Isur Hana will outlive the father. And since he outlives the father, then the son is still under that restriction of getting Hana from the possessions, even though he will inherit those possessions. So now you see that a person's able to create a nether that outlives him. Even when he's not around anymore, he's able to create a nether that makes it a surbana. Here he's lost ownership, and he's no longer a party, and he's still able to be osir these dvarim on his child. He says, wait a minute, over that's no proof. That case is not a proof, because there he states explicitly that the nether will outlive him. So in a case where he's explicit about the nether outliving him, then we have to agree. Even Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish will agree that the nether can outlive the individual. So now we have carved down an exception to the rule, at least according to Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish, that the ability to extend the nether beyond your lifetime or beyond your control does exist if you explicitly state it in your nether. Now, if you don't explicitly state it in your nether, they say that that doesn't work. So that case on Mem Zayin is not going to be a question against Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish, because that we can carve out and say that's where he specified that the neder would outlive him. But in other cases where he doesn't specify it, the neder can't outlive him or outlive his ownership. But the Gemara says, Mikom Makom Kasha. But we still have the first question. The first question still exists, which is, why did Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish only mention Nechasai and not mention Nechasim Elu? If their din is that you can never have the neder outlive your ownership, then they should have given us the bigger chiddush, which is saying that Nechasim Elu, when you stated about the Nechasim in general, it still doesn't exist after you lose control or you lose ownership over it. If they mentioned by Nechasai, it seems to narrow their chiddush to the case where you specified the Nechasai, which is that possessive Lashon. Hella. So now the Gemara proposes a different explanation of their machloket. B'nechasim elu, kulei hamalo plige. If you said nechasim elu, everybody agrees that it will outlive you. I mean that the neder can still exist and will continue into shvi'it, even if you took the neder before shvi'it, because you said nechasim elu. Ki plige b'nechasai. They argue in a case where you said nechasai, my possessions. Ravu shmol savrei, Loshna nechasim elu, loshna nechasai, adam oser. That you have the ability to be oser something that is in your possession, and have that iser persist after you lose possession of the object, no matter which language you used. Whether you use nechasim elu, where everybody agrees, it can persist afterwards. Versus even in a language where you say nechasai, when you said it's my possessions, and now they're not your possessions, the iser will still extend afterwards. And again, for the reasons that we stated before, which are either because he's using a word konam, he's using hekdesh in a sense to work over here. And hekdesh, like we said before, doesn't just go away. So over here, when he was osur them, when he was in his possession, even when it leaves his possession, they will remain asurim. The chepza remains a chepza shel isur. On the other hand, we'll have an argument here. Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish will disagree. We'll see that in a second. Which is, Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish says, Savrei nechasim, adam osir, nechasai ein adam osir. Nechasim or nechasim elu, a person can make asurim even after the neder expires, meaning or after his ownership expires. But nechasai, say his nechasim. If it's his nechasim, once it leaves his possession, they're no longer his nechasim, and therefore the isur will disappear. Now, they will explain that konam depends on how you use it. And we saw this earlier in the Masechta, that when you use konam, there are different types of konam. There's konam, which is a general konam, which makes the item asur to everyone, and then it functions like hekdesh. So in that case, when you make it asur to everybody, you can argue that it's like hekdesh, completely like hekdesh, and therefore maybe the isur should extend even beyond the loss of your ownership over the object. On the other hand, here, where it's a konam that's on a specific individual, there, that's a different type of hekdesh, or a different type of konam. That may not be as strong or powerful to go beyond your ownership. So that's one way to explain their machloket over here. The other way to explain it is that Hekdesh just doesn't disappear, or Isur doesn't just disappear. So once the Isur is devolved upon the object, even if you lose possession of the object, the Isur just doesn't go away, Memelo, just doesn't disappear. So even when you say Nechasai, the individual then is making it Asur, and it will remain Asur forever unless something's done to change that status. On the other hand, Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish, you're going to have to argue that when you have an isur, the isur is basically regenerated by the person who owns it because they own it. But as soon as that ownership disappears, then the isur is not reignited again or reinitiated again, and therefore the isur will disappear. Memela, only because he's not reinforcing or restating that neder, as if he's saying at every moment that it's asur to this individual. So that's now what the Gemara suggests is the machloka between them. The Gemara asks on that, Umi Ika the Mandamar, Lo Shna Nechasim Elu, Velo Shna Nechasai. How can you say there's no difference between Nechasim Elu and Nechasai Vahatanan? What about the Mishnah that we're going to see? Omer, Lechavero Konam Letoch Beitcha, Shani Nechnas, Shad Sadcha, Shani Lokeach. Person says, I will not enter your house. I will not go into your field. Mate, Oshim Echarola Acher. If he dies, or if he sells it to someone else, mutar. The bayit ze shani nichnas, sade zo shani lokeach, meit o shemecharo lacher asur. This is what we discussed before, that there's a difference between beitcha and bayit ze, or sadcha and sade ze. Question of whether you use that possessive form and you connect it to the particular owner of the field, or it's the field itself or the house itself, and that makes a difference. And then once we've made that distinction, then the same should be true here, at least with Nechasim Elu and Nechasai. Now, again, earlier on, we seem to think that there wasn't such a difference. We were able to overcome that difference in explaining, at least within the position of Rabbi Yochanan Ish Lakish, that maybe over there it has to do with the individual's ability to control the outcome because of their relationship with the object. But over here, in our case, where you don't have control of the object, it could be different. But that's on the side of Rabbi Yochanan Ish Lakish. But on Rav and Shmuel's side, they have to agree, at least, that there is a difference between the person's ability to create an Isur when they specify it in the possessive form versus when they specify it in the generic form, which is the difference between Nechasai and Nechasim Elu. So if that's the case, you can't argue that according to Rav and Shmuel, that by saying Nechasai, it's not going to make any difference at all. Ella, Ki Amrei Rabbi Yochanan Ish Lakish. What you have to say here is that when Rabbi Yochanan Ish Lakish said it, B'Nechasai, Rav Shmuel B'Nechasim Elu. And Rav and Shmuel made their statement B'Nechasim Elu, Velo Plige. And they do not argue. So now, once you've done that, you don't have an issue anymore because they're not arguing. The simple way to explain it, and this goes back to the original part of the Gemara, and the way that we saw the two explanations in the Mishnah, the way that the Rosh says it over here, Rabbi Yochanan Ish Lakish versus Rav and Shmuel have different ways of explaining the Mishnah. Rabbi Yochanan Ish Lakish say our Mishnah is talking about a case of Nechasai. Since the Mishnah is talking about a case of Nechasai, therefore they believe, if you took the Neder before Shvi'it, then the Neder impacts, then when Shvi'it arrives, then the Neder changes, because you said Nechasai, you said my possessions. Shvi'it comes and they're no longer your possessions, then the Neder changes, and then you'll be mutar in the Peirot. You still will not be mutar to enter the field. We'll see in a second why. But you will be mutar in the Peirot, because you specify the Neder, b'lashon Nechasai. On the other hand, Rav and Shmuel explained the Mishnah as talking about a case of Nechasim Elu. You said it in the generic form, Nechasim Elu. Therefore, if you took the Neder before Shvi'it, the Nechasim remain Asurim, both before Shvi'it and into Shvi'it. Doesn't matter. They remain always Asurim, because you use the generic term, Nechasim Elu. On the other hand, if you took the Neder on Shvi'it, then you can't change the fact that you don't own the property at that point. So if you don't own the property at that point, you can only masur what you control, what you have the ability to affect your other party with, which is what you own. And since you only have a partial ownership, you can only be oser him in that partial ownership. So the way the Rosh is explaining it is that Rabbi Yochanan Ish Lakish and Rav and Shmuel are explaining the Mishnah, but they each of them think the case in the Mishnah is different. Rabbi Yochanan Ish Lakish think the case of the Mishnah is Nechasai. Rav and Shmuel think the case of the Mishnah is Nechasim Elu. Therefore, they came out with their different readings of the Mishnah. Rabbi Yochanan Ish Lakish, who say it's Nechasai, say the Mishnah is talking about one case. It's one Neder before Shvi'it, and it's affected before Shvi'it, and then after Shvi'it, on Shvi'it, it makes a difference because of the Nechasai. Rav and Shmuel, who say that the Mishnah is talking about Nechasim Elu, see the cases being two different cases in the Mishnah. But they both agree. Because if you switch the Lashon, meaning that if Rav and Shmuel would explain the Mishnah by Nechasai, they would come to the same conclusion as Rabbi Yochanan Ish Lakish. And Rabbi Yochanan Ish Lakish explained the Mishnah Nechasim Elu, they'd also come to the same conclusion as Rav and Shmuel. That's the way that the Rosh explains the answer about the Machloket here. There are others who want to suggest that Rav and Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan Ish Lakish are not talking about our Mishnah at all. They're just talking about the specific case that they're speaking about, and has nothing to do with Mishnah. That's why they're making this whole thing independent of our Mishnah. And that's why there's no longer an issue of the Machloket. The Ran over here actually says that Rav and Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan Ish Lakish actually say the same thing. They both agree in the Mishnah. Klomar, to Rav and Shmuel, Mukmei la matnitin b'omer nechasai elu. Rav and Shmuel say that our Mishnah is talking about a case of nechasim elu. Dekeim damar elu, avagav damar nechasai, harei kilu amar nechasim elu. It's as if he says nechasim elu. What the Ran is pointing out here is that the Ran has actually a different girsa in our Gemara. The way that our Gemara reads now, the difference between Rabbi Yochanan and Ish Lakish and Rav and Shmuel is the difference between Nechasai and Nechasim Elu. On the other hand, the Ran has an alternate girsa, which is that the difference between them is actually Nechasai and Nechasai Elu. And therefore, what's derived here is the Elu makes the difference versus the Nechasai. And that's what he's mentioning over here. Domer Nechasai, Harelu Ki Ilu Amar Nechasim Elu. It's as if he said Nechasim Elu, Vasire Afilu Achar Shigia Shvit, and they remain Asurim even after Shvit. Reisha Rabuta Kamashman. And the Chiddush is in the Reisha. Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish Nami Hachi Mukmei Lamatnitan. And Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish agree. Vahachi Kamar, Lote Seka Daitan de Matnitan Nektani Afilu Gia Shvit, Inu Reid Venu Achel. And Tokma Afilu Nechasai. Don't think that's the case. The time of Mishum, the cave and the Nochit Bo Isura Tulo Poka. Because once the Isra comes, it doesn't go away. Valeta, Akohecha de Lomar, Eila Nechasai, Lomitasre. When you only say Nechasai, then there's no Isur. Ela ki itnu birshutei, as long as they're in his possession. Aval gi ashvit, ochel mena no tot, then you're allowed to eat. But so the verifer vadai, b'institan lo metukma elu b'nechasai elu. Therefore, a Mishnah must be talking about a case of nechasai elu. So according to him, nechasai elu is the same thing as nechasim elu. And that means that it's out of your possession. So Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish agreed to the same reading of Rav and Shmuel here in the Mishnah, that the Mishnah is a case of nechasim elu. And they'll read the Mishnah the same way that Rav and Shmuel do. But Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish are adding an additional din to us, which is that if you use the term Nechasai, then it will terminate by itself. It will self-terminate because of the Lashon and Nechasai that you are using. So that's the way the Ran reads it, that they both agree to read the Mishnah the same way, which is that it's Nechasim Elu, referring to the Ran's Girsa Nechasai Elu. And the Mishnah reads like Rav and Shmuel, or like we originally said, which is two different cases, a case where he took a neder before Shvit, and a case where he took a neder on Shvit. But Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish is just adding on that if you use a Lashon Nechasai, forget about our Mishnah, that will also have impact here because it will self-terminate, and therefore the din would not be the same din as our Mishnah. Okay, now the Gemara deals with the latter part of the Mishnah, which is that we have a strange distinction over here, which is that in the first case, we say that he's asur to enter the field, and he's asur to eat the peirot. Then Shvit comes, whether that means, again, depending how we explain the Mishnah, but when Shvit comes, you're allowed to eat the peirot, but you're not allowed to access the field. Why are the two separated? Mar says, Shvit in a way the toch sadeh v'chule. Maishna dochel min anotot, the peirot hefker, ra'inun. Why is he allowed to eat the peirot? Because it's Shvit and the peirot are hefker. Aranami afkaro. The land should have the same din, because it also should be hefker. Now, what's important here, it's actually, the Gemara here takes it for granted. In other places in Shas, it's not as clear, and happens to be a machloket rishonim with regards to this, which is that when it comes to Shemitah, do we say that the land is automatically hefker, which means afkata de malko, that God basically takes the land out of your possession, because that's what the Torah states will happen, and you have no choice about it. It's hefker, whether you like it or not, it's hefker. That's one way to view Shemitah. The other way to view Shemitah is that you have a requirement to be mafkir your land, or basically to not exert your ownership over the land. It's not that there is a heavenly easement on your land and you lose the control over it, but rather you are demanded of you to not stop people from coming in and taking that property or taking that which is there. Here the Gemara seems to think that it's afkalta demalka. I mean, you could explain it the other way as well, but it would be easier to explain it that way, that it's afkata d'malka, that God basically took this out of your possession, which means that the fruit are hefker, and so is the property hefker. If that's the case, then why are you allowed to get benefit from the fruits because they're hefker? You should also be able to get benefit from accessing the land because it's hefker. So Amar Ula, ba'umdim ilanot ala gvulim. It's a case where the trees are standing on the border. So now, the way that Ula explains it is that the access to the land is premised on your need to get to the fruits. So truthfully, the only thing that's really hefker is the fruits. The land gives you access to the fruits. So the Torah says, if you need access to the fruits, which are hefker, we allow you to go into the land to do that. But if you're able to access the fruits without going into the land, we're not going to permit you to go into the land. The Rosh over here actually has a safek about whether this is only applicable to someone who's mudar hana'ah. Therefore, if you have an option to do it without going into the land, we're not going to let you go. Or is this something applicable to broadly, to anyone? Anyone who on Shvi'it wants to access the land to get to the fruits, if he has a way to access it without going into the land, then he has to do it. So here, if you have trees that are on the border, mean that they're on the border between the public domain and this person's property, and you could pick the fruits from the public domain, are we going to insist that you do it from the public domain rather than accessing this person's field? So depending on which side of the Rosh, if you think this is only particular to a case of when he's Mudar Hana, or is this applicable to everybody, then there's a limited hefker of the property. The property is only hefker if you don't have another way to access the fruits. So in that case, when we're talking over here that the person has access to the fruits from the outside, then he can't enter the field. But if he has no way to access the fruits, meaning that they're in the middle of this guy's field, then he would be allowed to enter his field and go in there, because then he's not getting any benefit from that party, because the Torah was mafkir, the property, to you to access the fruits, to eat them or to pick them. And therefore, if it's in the middle of the field, you can go in as you please into that area. On the other hand, we have Rabbi Shimon ben Eliakim, who we saw earlier. He was quoted in the case of the sick individual. So Rabbi Shimon ben Eliakim amar, gzeira shema yishhe be'amida, because maybe he will tarry there in standing. So the problem is that you're right. You were given the right to access this individual's field. But your right to access the individual's field is limited to the picking of the fruit and the eating the fruit. What happens if you're in this person's field and then you're finished picking and you're finished eating and you tarry a little bit? If you tarry a little bit, then we have a problem, because you're getting benefit from this individual's field without any more dispensation from the Torah to access those fruits. So now, way Reb Shimon Eliakim is reading it, this gzeira is broadly applicable. I mean, you'll never be able to enter this person's field while you are mudar hana from him. Doesn't matter if the tree's on the border, doesn't matter if the tree's in the middle of the field. Our fear is that once we let you into the field, that you'll do more than is permitted to you by the Torah to stay there. Now, maybe in general, people aren't makpid on that, and therefore, you don't have to worry about it generally. But here, this person's mudar hana, it's clear that he is makpid on this person's entering his land. If that's the case, then you can't go in there and tarry. If you do tarry, you're going to be in violation of the neder. So in order to prevent that, we don't let you go into the land at all. So according to, let's say, both answers, technically you're allowed to enter the land. You're allowed to enter this person's field because it is hefker. As a preventative measure, we don't let you go in. In one case, ula, it's either because the trees are on the border and you have a way to access it without it, so we're not going to let you go in. Or maybe this is a broader din in Shemitah, that nobody's allowed to enter the field if they can access it from the Rishut Arabim. Rav Shimon HaYokim clearly says it's gzeirah, but he won't let you go into any trees. Doesn't matter if it's on the border or if it's in the middle of the field. We worry about this. Shema Yishev. Now, as we distinguished here versus the case of the Choleh, over here it says Shema Yishev B'Amida. Back by the Choleh, we said that the fear there was Shema Yishev B'Yishiva, that maybe it will stay by sitting. And that Taran notes over here, and we noted it in the case of the Choleh as well on Friday's daf, which is that the difference is between the individual here, Bamida, is the normal way to go in and pick fruits. So the normal way to pick fruits is to stand up and pick them and to eat them and to take them out of the field. So our fear there is Shemi Sheh Bamida, you'll stay standing. The other hand, by Bikur Cholim, if a person goes in standing into the Bikur Cholim, that in itself is already temporary of nature, and it's not something where the person's going to tarry or stay longer because of the fact that he's standing. Standing is not a real Bikur. A bikur is when you sit down and you spend time with the individual. Once you sit down and spend time with the individual, then we're worried about Shemi Sheh, that you're going to stay longer. By standing in it itself is a heker, that you're not staying or you're not going to tarry too long. And so therefore, the fear by Bikur Cholim is Shemi Sheh B'Shiva. We worry about you staying and sitting. On the other hand, over here, we worry about you Shemi Sheh B'Amida, because Amida is not a heker by itself, that you're not supposed to pick from these fruits or from this field. Okay, we're going to stop over here by the Mishnah on the bottom of Membet Amud Bet.